The remarks of the President upon signing the Public Television Act. The East Room of the White House, the 7th of November, 1967.
Secretary Gardner, Senator Pastore, Chairman Staggers, members of the Congress, Cabinet, ladies and gentlemen. It was in 1844 that Congress authorized $30,000 for the first telegraph line between Washington and Baltimore. And soon afterwards, Samuel Morse sent a stream of dots and dashes over that line to a friend that was waiting. And his message was brief and prophetic, and it read, "What hath God wrought?" Every one of us should feel the same awe and wonderment here today. For today, miracles in communication are daily routine. Every minute, billions of telegraph messages chatter around the world. Some are intercepted on ships. Interrupt law enforcement conferences and discussions of morality. Billions of signals rush over the ocean and fly above the clouds. Radio and television fill the air with sound. Satellite hurls messages thousands of miles in a matter of seconds. And today our problem is not making miracles, but managing miracles. And we might well ponder a different question. What hath man wrought? And how will man use his invention? The law that I will sign shortly offers one answer to that question. It announces to the world that our nation wants more than just material wealth. Our nation wants more than a chicken in every pot. We in America have an appetite for excellence, too. And while we work every day to produce new goods and to create new wealth, we want most of all to enrich man's spirit. And that is the purpose of this act. It will give a wider and, I think, stronger voice to educational radio and television by providing new funds for broadcast facilities. It will launch a major study of television's use in the nation's classrooms and their potential use throughout the world. Finally, and most important, it builds a new institution, the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. This corporation will assist stations and producers who aim for the best in broadcasting good music, in broadcasting exciting plays, in broadcasting reports on the whole fascinating range of human activity. It will try to prove that what educates can also be exciting. It will get part of its support from our government, but it will be carefully guarded from government or from party control. It will be free and it will be independent and it will belong to all of our people. Television is still a young invention, but we have learned already that it has immense, even revolutionary, power to change our lives. And I hope that those who lead the corporation will direct that power toward the great and not the trivial purposes. At its best, public television would help make our nation a replica of the old Greek marketplace, where public affairs took place in view of all of the citizens. But in weak or even in irresponsible hands, it could generate controversy without understanding. It could mislead as well as to teach. It could appeal to passions rather than to reason. If public television is to fulfill our hopes, then the corporation must be representative. It must be responsible, and it must be long on enlightened leadership. I intend to search this nation to find men that I can nominate, men and women of outstanding ability, to this board of directors. As a beginning this morning, I have called on Dr. Milton Eisenhower, formerly John Hopkins, and Dr. James Killian of MIT, to serve as members of this board. Dr. Eisenhower, as you will remember, was chairman of the first Citizens Committee, which sought allocation of airwaves for educational purposes. Dr. Killian served as chairman of the Carnegie Commission, which proposed the act that we're signing today. What hath man wrought, and how will man use his miracles? The answer just begins with public television. In 1862, the Morrill Act set aside lands in every state, lands which belonged to the people. And it set them aside in order to build the land-grant colleges of the nation. So today, we rededicate a part of the airwaves which belong to all the people, and we dedicate them for the enlightenment of all the people. I believe the time has come to stake another claim in the name of all the people. Stake a claim based upon the combined resources of communications. I believe the time has come to enlist the computer and the satellite, as well as television and radio, and to enlist them in the cause of education. And if we are up to the obligations of the next century, and if we are to be proud of the next century as we are of the past two centuries, we've got to quit talking so much about what's happened in the past two centuries and start talking about what's going to happen in the next century, beginning in 76. So I think we must consider new ways to build a great network for knowledge, not just a broadcast system, but one that employs every means of sending and of storing information that the individual can use. Think of the lives that this would change. The student in a small college could tap the resources of a great university. Dr. Killian had just given me an exciting report of his contact in Latin America as a result of some of the declaration of the presidents at Punta del Este that he's followed through on, and how these presidents are now envisioning the day when they can dedicate 20, 25, a larger percent of their total resources for one thing alone, education and knowledge. Yes, the student in a small college tapping the resources of the greatest university in the hemisphere. The country doctor getting help from a distant laboratory or a teaching hospital. A scholar in Atlanta might draw instantly on a library in New York. A famous teacher could reach with ideas and inspirations into some far-off classroom so that no child need be neglected. Eventually, I think this electronic knowledge bank could be as valuable as the Federal Reserve Bank. And such a system could involve other nations. It could involve them in a partnership to share knowledge and to thus enrich all mankind. A wild and visionary idea? Not at all. Yesterday's strangest dreams are today's headlines, and change is getting swifter every moment. I've already asked my advisors to began to explore the possibility of a network for knowledge, and then to draw up a suggested blueprint for it. In 1844, when Henry Thoreau heard about Mr. Morse's telegraph, he made a sour comment about the race for faster communication. Perchance, he warned, the first news which will leak through into the broad, flapping American ear will be that the Princess Adelaide has the whooping cough. We do have skeptic comments on occasions. But I don't want you to be that skeptic. I do believe that we have important things to say to one another, and we have the wisdom to match our technical genius. And in that spirit this morning, I have asked you to come here and be participants with me in this great movement for the next century, the Public Broadcasting Act of 1967. This act has a host of fathers. Many years ago, when I was a member of the Senate, I had a bill prepared, Mr. Siegel drafted for me, public television. I had difficulty getting it introduced. I asked Senator Magnuson to introduce it, and he did. I'm sorry he can't be here today, but he called me before I came over here and explained to me that how happy he was that this event was taking place. I don't want to single out to any one person, because there are so many who have worked so long to bring this bill into where it is this morning to be signed. I do want to recognize, though, in addition to Senator Magnuson, the chairman, Senator Pastore, the chairman of the subcommittee, who has spent many days and weeks and years in this effort, and Senator Cotton, the ranking member of that committee, and Chairman Staggers, and Congressman McDonald, and Congressman Springer, all of whom have been a part of the team that has brought this measure to the White House to make it the law of our land. I should like to send a very special word of greeting to Mr. William Harley and the National Association of Educational Broadcasters, who are gathered out in Denver today and who are participating in this ceremony by remote control. As I mentioned before, we're honored to have Dr. James Killian here this morning, and we're grateful to him and other members of the Carnegie Commission who provided the ideas and the inspiration, some of which are incorporated in this legislation. I think I should add that John Gardner came to me in the early days when he was head of the Carnegie Commission before we brought him in here, and suggested this commission, and asked me to help participate in forming it and make suggestions, and we're indebted to Dr. Gardner for this, as we are to many things that he has done to provide leadership in the field of what's really important in the world, the education of our people. This time I'm going to call on Mr. Alan Pfeiffer, who is president of the Carnegie Corporation, who has a statement that I hope will be of slight interest to all of you. Dr. Pfeiffer. Are there any other distinguished and generous did I hear? Be glad to recognize them. If not, I want to express my personal appreciation to Mr. Douglas Cater of the White House staff for the many months that he has followed this legislation and worked on it. And if not, we'll now sign it, and those of you can come.
Gentlemen, front row.